It is Way of the Warrior, episode 285. And if you could do us a favor, this would be awesome. If you are listening on iTunes, please give us reviews, because that's the only way that the podcast floats up so that more people can discover it.
Unless it's a bad review.
Well, I don't, at this point, I don't really care. Just review it.
Any press is good press.
All press is good press. Going straight WWE on this one. So episode 285, if you're on iTunes, give us a review. Five-star preferred, apparently, according to Ken. But I'll
One-star is fine.
One-star is perfect. All right, we'll get this going. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hallgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. A historic evening on Saturday night as Ronda Rousey retains her bantamweight championship over Betch Kohea in 34.1 seconds.
Ooh, you got it down to the point one.
Well, I mean, that's what we do here. So a big, big night of fights. And obviously we walk out of this with a lot of questions. We also have UFC in Tennessee this week. We will talk to Glover Teixeira later on in the show. We will also talk to Andrew Flower from 538. If you've not heard of 538, you might have heard of Nate Silver's book, The Signal and Noise. That is the blog that accompanies said book. They specialize in statistics and have statistically broken down why Ronda Rousey is such a badass. So we'll talk to him.
Can I do a little spoiler?
Yeah, go ahead.
She's an outlier.
She is. We are not talking to Malcolm Gladwell. Just to be sure, not talking to Malcolm Gladwell. We'll talk to Andrew Flowers a little bit later on. But back to UFC 190. We went to Brazil. The UFC trying to paint it as enemy territory, as we alluded to last week. It was anything but.
It was a little bit. Anything but is a little strong. Nope. Anything but. Because when the fight started, and by that, you know, at the beginning of the fight, the first 7 or 8 seconds. I mean, and the intro, she was catching some boos.
Sure.
I mean, they were definitely on her side, you know, less than a minute later. But... I think there was some hometown pride there for Betch Kohera, and it faded quickly, as did many things that night. But yeah, enemy territory, not quite. I wouldn't go anything but I'll go with a not quite.
Okay, fair enough.
That's how we do this show.
I would just
semantically.
Semantics. I would just say, you know, it was really interesting to see all the coverage leading up. It just didn't seem as, you alluded to it last week, right? If this was Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva, it would never look anything like like what you saw.
No.
So that's what I mean by it wasn't, sure, they want their woman to win. Of course, Brazil wants Brazil to win. But I don't know that I would say that it was particularly hostile. They just cheer for their hometown favorite, as they should.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, too, one thing that Brazilians obviously respect is the fact that Ronda Rousey is such a dominant champion. They're going to obviously root for who their hometown girl is in that instance. But it's very interesting because I don't think Ronda had any disrespect for Brazilians. I think she had a ton of disrespect for Betch Kohea. I mean, obviously,
as,
at this point,
she should.
What happened, you know, in the lead up to the fight, the allusions to her dad's suicide, the fact that she's screaming she's going to knock her out. She says she hopes she doesn't cry after she beats Ronda Rousey. It's been hit over and over again. Ronda walked away after knocking Betch out and said, "Don't cry." Two simple words, and she walked away from Betch. And it was an amazing 34 seconds, and more amazing, she's done this a couple times, and this was really the one where people kind of caught on. Like, oh my God, look at what she did here. And I think some of it is that, you know, those allusions to Tyson. We've seen the videos of her and Tyson popping up left and right. You know, she dedicated the fight to Rowdy Roddy Piper. Which it caught a lot of mainstream attention, obviously, because his unfortunate passing last week caught a lot of mainstream attention. So you had a couple of things at play here. And you also had the fact that, you know, ESPN, they've been pretty on board with Ronda Rousey recently. You know, the previews for this fight were interesting. At this point, you know, I think Dana White is saying they could do 2.5 million if they ever get her and Cyborg together at this point.
And I don't disagree.
But you know what? Maybe. But 2.499 million of that is all Ronda. Because at this point, I see the calls for it, and I see everybody wants the fight, and a lot of people like you are a little upset we got to watch her fight Miesha Tate again. I really don't think that many people know, outside of this hardcore MMA community, who the hell Cyborg is. Let's remember, Ronda Rousey's meteoric rise did not really begin in Strikeforce. That's where her career started. But that's not the meteoric rise. The meteoric rise began when Dana White finally decided to buy in, said, okay, we're going to try women's MMA. And she got that UFC stage, and she took off.
A bit of nuance, technically, he said, we're going to try Ronda Rousey, right?
Like, oh, exactly.
We're going to build a thing around you. We're not trying women's MMA.
No, I mean, and for years, because, I mean, we're hearing a lot of this back and forth. And I found it interesting. The head of Showtime Sports was tweeting about how these last three main events haven't even totaled 4 minutes with Ronda. Dude, really? Really? Like, you think somebody's going to pay to watch Mayweather hug somebody for 12 rounds or Ronda knock somebody out? Well, because I don't remember it costing Tyson a whole lot of money back in the
80s. And this is what I was going to get here. Misha Tate said the same thing. Like, people are getting bored with Ronda. They're not going to pay $60 to see her fight. Let me just say this, because we don't do this very often on the show. Bullshit. They're not going to pay $60 to see this happen. I'm telling you, it's exactly like Mike Tyson. People would get angry, but they would get angry for a different reason that I know you and I are going to get into, because UFC 190 went very Tyson on us. And we'll talk about that in a second, but that's why people got angry. People mm-hmm. did not get angry that Mike Tyson won in 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. That is not what they got angry with. They got angry with you boring them to death with stuff leading up to Mike Tyson. And this was a clear case of this, which we'll get to in a second.
It's like they listened to the last three or four podcasts we had and said, hey, let's see if we can just get Ken to really go insane. Because I don't know what the hell they were thinking with the pacing of this card. And Ariel Helwani was trying to do damage control on Twitter. It wasn't happening on Saturday night. Obviously, you're alluding to the fact that right in the middle of all this amazing stuff that's kind of happening in Brazil.
A lot of amazing stuff.
They shoved in these Ultimate Fighter finales. Yes, I get that Globo or Snowbo or whatever the hell the channel is in Brazil was supposed to air these fights out of Florida. And there were visa issues. I don't care what your visa issues are. You made me pay for this event. I paid for that event.
No, you didn't. You paid to see Ronda Rousey, and anything that stood in the way of you and Ronda Rousey was a pain in your ass.
No, the Nog fights were good, both Nog fights. I mean, as far as me paying for them, we'll break those down in a couple minutes. But I don't have any issue. If you've got to put them on the card, I don't understand what they were doing right in the middle of the damn thing and why there were video lead-ups, you know, subtitled video lead-ups that I don't care about. I'm sorry. I don't care about these guys. You know, I forget which fighter tweeted out. God, I wish I need to give credit. I'm sorry. I wish I had retweeted this. But one of the fighters tweeted out. You could tell he had enough of it. He's like, it was the famous Jack Kennedy quote from the Quayle Mondale debates. Remember that? I knew Jack Kennedy, sir. You're no Jack Kennedy.
You are no Jack Kennedy.
Well, one of the fighters tweeted out in the middle, I think, of the second fight is, I knew the Ultimate Fighter won, sir. You, sir, are not the Ultimate Fighter. So, I mean, even some of the fighters were getting upset at that point. And it's because, you know what? These guys aren't that good. They're not at that level yet. I'm not saying they might not be world champions one day. But holy cow, I'll tell you one thing. These Ultimate Fighter Brazil contestants, they never lack any confidence, do they? Walking through the crowd, thinking they're everybody, oh, you're all here for me. I mean, these dudes really rub people the wrong way. If one of them ever gets really good, one of these Brazilian Ultimate Fighters, they're going to be one of the biggest heels in the business because these dudes are so full of themselves.
Absolutely. But here's the thing, and since we got here, we'll stay here for a second. And I had
then
said
back to Ronda.
And we'll get back, I promise. But I had said this multiple times on Twitter because I was getting a fair amount of heat for complaining about it because I just...
Really?
Like, yeah. Well, because, you know, they're like, well, I saw a couple people on Twitter and I took exception to them saying, oh, this is what I've always wanted for a night of fights. And I'm here to tell you that... From a marketing perspective alone, then we'll get back to me as the MMA fan. From a marketing perspective alone, you have people like my wife, mm-hmm. and I've got friends' wives that are tuning in just to see Ronda Rousey. They're giving you $60 for something they don't pay for but twice a year when Ronda fights.
No, the bars were full at 8 o'clock at night for an event that starts at 10.
So I'll say this one more time. Anything you put in the way of Ronda Rousey is costing you money. And ending that card at 2 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast is career suicide. And I'm going to tell you this as an MMA fan, never once in my life have I thought to myself, I would love to pay $60 to watch 288 people fight. Because you know what? If that were true, I would go to every AMI MMA dumb fight thing on planet Earth because that's what they do. They have 58 fights for $10. Nobody is going to those things. It is not a volume sport. They want to see awesome fights. And if you took these two fights out, I get it. The Vieira Lopez fight was great. Everybody wants to do guillotines on each other for 10 minutes. Totally fine. You take those two. If they've got to be aired, they get aired in the prelim card.
I don't even need them in the prelim. I need them tightly wound up in the beginning of that card.
But in the middle.
Because the pacing just was thrown out the window. Because the other thing, too, is about UFC 190. We know the fight card. As much as we love Hua and Big Nog, or Lil Nog, excuse me, was that was that fight.
Yes.
Big Nog too. As much as we love all three of those dudes, we know their fighting style. And when I watch the Hua fight, Lil Nog fight, I'm watching it. It looks like when you're lagging on a video game, or when something's slowing down on your DirecTV because you don't have the internet connection or the stream right. Because those dudes were fighting slow. So we knew that was going to happen. We knew it was probably going to be 15 minutes without a decision. I liked the fight. It was just kind of like a slowed down version of their fight 10 years ago, which is not terrible. But it came on the heels of that point of six rounds of fights nobody gave a single crap about, essentially, except for those dudes' family. Everybody loves their family, by the way. Stop putting that in the video packages.
Right.
I really love my family.
That was my favorite tweet.
No kidding.
That was my favorite tweet of yours on Saturday night.
Right.
Was
like we, show me. You know what? I'll be interested the next when they show one of these guys. I hate my family. That's why I fight. I don't want to ever see them.
So I get to travel all the time.
All right. I mean, obviously, too. You had the Struve Big Nog fight go to decision. I don't know. Struve's the biggest fighter that I don't think knows he's the biggest fighter. Like, he never fights like he's bigger than the other dude.
No, and his inability to keep the distance, I just don't. I mean, yes, he won this fight handily. Mm-hmm. The 30-27 is totally, I have no problem with the score.
No.
What I have a problem with is there was no reason for Big Nog to get anywhere near him.
No.
No reason at all. You could have just ran around and picked him apart for the same amount of time and got the same result.
Yeah, that was interesting too. I mean, obviously Bigfoot, I thought, delivered earlier on the card. The problem with this card, like you said, was timing. And
well, you even had, I mean,
Jessie wanted to watch this fight. She went to bed.
Yeah,
she's like, we started up these fights. She's like, how many fights are left? I'm like, four. She's like, have a great night.
Right. Well, and I was in Chicago, and my wife texted me, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to text you at 2 in the morning and let you know that she won, because that's silly. But you even start with, you head out of the prelim cards as Damian Maia destroys Neil destroys.
Yeah, that was a
Neil
fun,
Magny.
Quick fight.
You get to see Claudia Gadelha destroy Jessica Aguilar and get another shot at Johanna Jędrzejczyk, which, you know, I thought that was another great fight. You get to see somebody who went the distance with Jędrzejczyk, and I think for the women's strawweight division, that was a great fight to get you fired up. Bigfoot delivered what he wanted to deliver, and exactly what the crowd needed at that moment was a KO. The Struve Big Nog fight was what you thought it was going to be. Then, like you said, you get these two.
Yeah, this was
whatever.
This was amazing. Well, I mean, you've got two full three rounds. I know the one end, he ended it, 4 seconds before the end?
Yeah, right.
Like, as if to try to trick us into thinking that was a
real
finish.
Yeah, right.
So you had 15 minutes of fighting. You had the 3.5-4 minutes, so you got 20 minutes there of just in the ring. You have video packages on. So, I mean, for the better part of an hour, nobody gave a crap about what was on the screen for, essentially. And I'm not talking about you and I as casual kind of MMA journalists, I guess you'd say, or casual MMA media. We keep our toes in the water. I mean, you saw some dudes at CBS. You saw some dudes that cover this sport for a living that were just tweeting and annihilating the UFC for this decision. And I get it. You've got Ronda Rousey. She's your carrot at the end of the stick. She's the one that everybody's staying for. So are we all going to stay there? Probably. But like you said, this thing ended up at 2 a.m. on the East Coast. One of the drawbacks of a Ronda Rousey fight, if you could actually make a case for those people who are bitching about it being so short, is when you deliver this thing so far later into the night, you've got a chance for this thing to be everywhere the next day, because it's only 34 seconds of video that's got to hide somewhere.
Yeah.
Essentially, this 20 seconds of fighting. I'm not kidding when I say this fight could literally live on Twitter and on Vine and on Instagram videos.
Yep. Totally.
And it essentially did. So, I mean, the next morning, I obviously purchased the fight. I was able to rewatch it on my PlayStation. But so Jessie watched the fight in the morning. How many people at whatever point, maybe they went to a bar, so they didn't pay for it. Or maybe they were like, your wife, or maybe they were like my wife. And in this situation, they decided, okay, I'm not going to stay up for it. You know, is this what happens every time, too? Because that's the other thing. You've got such a casual audience that wants to see Ronda Rousey, and you brought them in and you just hosed them on their expectations. Because you've got this card that lasted till 2 in the morning. Yeah, I like that Ronda girl, but man, I'm not going to stay up to 2 to watch her. Well, it doesn't happen like that every time. Oh, well, yeah, they don't know that.
Right.
All they know is they had to stay up till 2 in the morning to watch Ronda Rousey. And again, maybe we sound like, 80-year-old men in this podcast. But again, in this situation, if you go back a week ago and you go look at the TJ Dillashaw fight and Henan Burrell, they did 2.5 million people on Fox, right?
Yep.
I think they might have been higher during the main event. That fight was on at freaking 10 o'clock. And that's when you can put a fight on. And I get it that the West Coast got a little bit of a perk here, but what is it, 70% of the country's east of the Mississippi?
But even those guys knew it was up. You were seeing all sorts of MMA journalists on the West Coast going, I feel for you, East Coast. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's midnight here, and we've got 10 fights left.
Right.
You know, like, whatever.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, is you know, I felt like during those fights, like, they were just trying to give World Series of Fighting a chance to compete because they were running a card, and I know we'll talk a little bit probably about that title fight coming up in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And oh, and the Diaz brothers were there too.
Right, they were.
So let's get to Ronda though.
So yeah, she comes out in probably one of the coolest intros I think you've seen in quite some time, and I thought did what she needed to do. I am not somebody who is in love with her strike. I didn't think that was the most technical display of striking I've ever seen. She landed what she needed to land, but if you compare that to when you would see Anderson Silva strategically do the same thing to a person, it didn't look the same. Her striking is getting dramatically better, but I think we can dial back some of the hyperbole of how amazing she is.
Right. Well, and I thought her striking was pretty on point. I mean, I mean,
obviously it was.
I didn't give it the credit I should have. I did tweet out after that fight, Beth's plan wasn't actually that bad. She was able to engage her standing. She was able to land a couple. Ronda was a little marked up, and we don't know what Ronda's game is, and if that's how she was going to win, we would have probably bet on that for Beth Carrera, right?
Yeah.
Is in this instance, if she wins the fight, oh, she probably knocked her out. So to goad her into that isn't a terrible plan. What happens, though, is her hands were better. Now, you look at that instance, and you look at Ronda Rousey, and she was able to knock Beth Carrera out. She outclassed her. She was able to take some hits. Beth lands any of those punches in a different spot, you just never know. A fight's a fight. And that's the most room, even in some of the Misha Tate fights, which went much longer. That's the most room I think Ronda Rousey's ever given an opponent to beat her. And again, I know we're picking apart minute details in literally seconds of a fight, but if you look at the fight again, which you can do on Vine and Twitter
right,
and Instagram,
yes.
You know, that's the most opportunity I think an opponent's ever really had against Ronda Rousey. Because even in those Misha Tate fights, she didn't really get into a stand-up exchange like that. Sometimes she would get caught, she'd back out. You know, I think some of that was emotion for Ronda on what had happened before the fight and the
right.
day before with the weigh-ins and all of the stuff leading up to that. But that's the kind of thing that if we're going to end up talking about a cyborg fight in the future, that's the kind of thing that could land Ronda flat on her ass. Will it happen? No. I don't think she does that with Cyborg. I think if Cyborg ends up in the cage against her, she's going to run over there, take her down, grab her arm, and it's going to be good night. I think it's going to be a quick sub. I don't think Ronda Rousey's going to, quote-unquote, need to show off against Cyborg.
And
she's going to go beat her.
I think with Beth Cohea, what you saw was Ronda knew going in her hands were better.
Mm-hmm.
And you're 1,000% right. Like, Beth had some chances in there. Although it's only 34 seconds, it's easy to say that she was dispatched and outclassed because she was. But she walked away and said, I did what I wanted to do. And she probably means it because she did what she wanted. She clipped Ronda a couple times. And Ronda even, you see, if you go back and watch the fight, there's a point where, as I told you last week, there's a point where their hips touch.
Mm-hmm.
And Ronda thinks about doing that toss that
right,
she always
wants
does.
To be done with it.
But she doesn't. She continues to keep it standing. I think just because she thought that she had the better hands, and in this case, she did. But you're right. Beth had more chances than most other people, given the fact that it was exactly what Beth would have wanted if Ronda's hands were a touch slower.
Or her hands were a touch better or one landed in a slightly different spot. The one thing I will agree with, I believe it was Rashad Evans, was on the Fox After Fight show. Yeah, I stayed up for some of that, too. I do think
you must have slept all Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think it's very interesting in these last couple of fights with Ronda. Nobody seems to take their time to just kind of try to gauge the situation. And I do think Beth could have done what she did, but done it a minute or two later and let all that adrenaline dump happen.
Sure.
And let all of the things inside the cage calm down. Now, again, if Ronda decides to press the issue, you know, you've got to defend yourself and you've got to fight. I didn't necessarily see it that way. I think Ronda engaged with what Beth was doing, and they were both engaging with each other. It's interesting that Ronda Rousey's become this mythical type of fighter where these fighters just get a little bit out of sorts. You know, you've got Beth Cohera basically running at her and swinging away. Like, you could wait a minute, guys. This is a championship fight. And you could try to figure out some space. You could figure out your range.
And you saw that if you go back and watch the Rory McDonald-Lawler fight, right? That first minute or two, those guys are just, they're engaging. Mm-hmm. They're at a high aggression level, but they're both waiting for that thing to go away. Like,
well,
let's just relax and let the adrenaline go away and let's figure this out. And then once that adrenaline goes away at about, like, we'll call it 2 minutes. I'm not looking at the fight right now, so I don't know. That's when you see the pace actually increase because now they feel that they have control of over their body. And what you're about to say is it's interesting that Betch didn't learn anything from Kat Zingano.
Well, Kat Zingano ran in there, and again, we it's funny too because we look at a lot of these fights now with the losers against Ronda Rousey, and we go, yeah, the plan wasn't that bad because she was going to win and she had to do that. But in that case, you know, she runs at her. What was it? It was 14 seconds, right?
Yeah, that was 14 seconds.
I think that was the quickest sub in history. I think we've had a quicker knockout, but not a quicker sub.
I don't believe so.
I may be wrong about that. I think Alexis Davis, it was the same thing. She ran in there and got KO'd. So, I mean, you've got all these fighters who are starting to freak out in these Ronda Rousey fights. Even if you go back to Sarah McMahon, which was the long fight in recent history. That was a minute long, right?
Yes.
Something like that. You've got these fighters that have seen Ronda Rousey dispatch Miesha Tate and Liz Carmouche and Sarah Kaufman, I think, was on the list. I mean, she's beaten some of these fighters. She beat Sarah, I think, in a minute, too. You almost sense that these fighters are beating themselves a little bit before they get in the cage because I'm watching the – and again, man, we're extrapolating a lot from 34 seconds. But I'm watching this fight. I'm watching Kat. You know, you watch the fight with Alexis Davis, and these fighters are just going in there, and they're freaking out. They've done this before. A lot of these fighters are legit female fighters. Now, would they eventually win even if they took their time? Probably not. I'm not saying they would, but, you know, in this fight, let's take the 34 seconds and look at it. How much different is this fight if there's a couple exchanges in and out where Betch can find her range a little better? And she's not just eating punches because, okay, we're just going now. We're just going to happen. It's going to happen now. How much better does that fight look for her? I mean, maybe she gets out of the first round. Maybe she tags Ronda a couple more times because, again, go look at the interview. She hit Ronda a couple times.
Sure. Well, I mean, and look,
in
so,
34 seconds, where that happened to Ronda Rousey.
So let's slow it down a little bit and take a fight from the prelims cards that exactly what you alluded to happens. If you watch Cavalcante and Patrick Cummings is destroying Cavalcante, but Pat Cummings looked like he went through a meat grinder, right? Because that gave a lot of chances for Cavalcante to just pound Cummings in the eyes. And if Cummings isn't a game fighter that he clearly is. You know, we made fun of him when he fought Cormier as the barista, but the dude's legit, right? Like, he's beating guys like Cavalcante, who was title material in Strikeforce, but there was space in that fight for mistakes to happen because both of those guys paced it out. And you're exactly right. If the opponent, and I'm not saying anybody has the recipe to beat her, but I'm agreeing with you that running at her at full aggro is really not the great. That's actually when you're going to make the most mistakes. And I don't disagree. You know, if you listen, Kenny Florian and John Anik do a podcast every Monday where they break down the week's fight.
It's almost as good as this one.
It's almost. They're getting there. I've been sending them tips about how great they could be. But you know, they were saying that, and I agree with them, that, like, Miesha Tate has zero chance in beating Ronda Rousey because of what I said last week. There's this weird mythology in MMA that when you see fighter A get better from 2013 to 2015 and they're going to fight the champion, you assume that the champion has just slept in a bed for 2 years and not evolved. And you know, John Anik made a great joke that breaking news, Ronda Rousey will not be allowed to train for the Miesha Tate fight, so that there might be some chance for her to catch up. But this plan of, like, let's see if it paces it out is the only one who's been able to do that is Miesha.
Yeah, well, I do, and I understand that because there is some of that.
And I think you said it last week, right? It's Miesha, everybody else, and then Ronda, right?
Like, yeah, there's giant gaps in between, essentially. I will say, I think the reason, if you're going to make any case for this fight coming up, the reason you'll look at that and go, well, maybe Ronda's not where, didn't improve as much as Miesha, or however you want to look at that development. And clearly she has. She's been training and doing things. I think within the cage, though, I think it's a comfort level with Ronda Rousey at this point. She's now been in four fights. I keep forgetting the Sarah McMahon fight. She's now been in four fights that have been essentially a minute or less. I think if Misha Tate gets in there and starts grinding her, I'm not saying she's going to blow up her cardio or anything like that, but I certainly think there's a comfort level for Ronda Rousey at this point in just getting in there and being done. And Misha Tate made her very uncomfortable in that last fight. I think that's one thing we'll all agree on when we watch that fight. I mean, she took her three rounds. She ended up subbed out in the third round, but Ronda didn't look very comfortable those first couple rounds. She was winning the fight, but you could tell she didn't like having to fight that way. And the interesting thing here, too, is if Misha Tate can get in there and just kind of slow this down, she's got a chance. She's got a chance. You know, she made some moves in that last fight. If you go back and download the podcast, we saw opportunities there that we haven't seen against Ronda Rousey since. So let's do that thing. Maybe they're both developing the same way. We kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier in a different way with Lil Nog and Hua. If they're both developing essentially the same ways, which I don't think we saw from Misha Tate last fight, but again, fighter versus A and B is sometimes different how it looks against fighter C. You know, if they're about the same as they were when they met before and they've both gotten, you know, exponentially better in that same way, we've at least got an interesting fight coming up. Is it a fight where you're going to bet on Misha Tate? No. No, it's not. Is it a fight where you think there's opportunities for Misha Tate? I think so. I think so. Is that the best way to make a fight? No, but I mean, what are you going to do? She's cleared the division out. The one thing I find interesting is if she's going to take this attitude, and I really don't think she will after this Petch fight, but if she's going to take this attitude, she's going to take some hits to give some hits. That's going to give people openings. Remember, that's what happened to George St. Pierre.
Yep.
Back when he lost to Matt Serra. He said he got away from his game plan. The best game plan in a fight is not to outstrike your opponent. It's to not get hit by your opponent and then do what you want to do. And he said, you know, he got out of that a little bit and got caught up into it. Matt Serra, boom, fight was over. One of the best champions in the history of UFC, a certain Hall of Famer at this point, a guy who even admittedly at this point says he was essentially out of it and should have gotten out of it three or four fights earlier, was still dominant near the end. One of the best in the world, he caught a punch. So let's not look away from the fact that she was willing to give and take in this 34 seconds.
Let's use a more modern example of Anderson Silva mm-hmm. and Chris Weidman, right?
Yeah, you know, I kind of forget that one just because Weidman was so dominant again in the second fight.
But I mean, the first one, I was going to take your punches because I don't think you can hurt me. Oh, I'm unconscious.
But see, Silva didn't really try to take those punches. He just got hit with one thinking he was faster than the punches. But it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. You know, you don't think that they're a threat and you give them an unnecessary opening. The game here is just, it's not unlike jiu-jitsu at its natural state, right? Jiu-jitsu is just using what your opponent gives you against them. That's what MMA is, using what your opponent gives you against them. And if you give these openings and you decide to allow this punch drunk philosophy of I need to get dinged up before I really get going, that can get you in trouble because mm-hmm. eventually you get so far behind, even if it's a good fight, you can get so far behind on the scorecard that you can't catch up unless you finish the fight.
Oh, certainly.
And I'm not saying that Ronda Rousey is going to get behind on the scorecard with Misha Tate. That's not what I'm saying.
Mm-mm.
But I am saying if she does Misha Tate on December 5, I believe, is the rumored date that they're going to go to Dallas with.
They want to try to line her up with Conor McGregor
and Aldo. That's the rumor that has not been confirmed, but that's the rumor. And she's going to go away and do her biopic because they're doing Rousey the movie. It's based on the book that she just wrote. That's what she's going to do after that fight, which will give Cyborg, I believe that's the plan, although nobody said it out loud, give Cyborg plenty of time to figure out how to get down to 135. Mm-hmm. If that's the thing, you don't want to give Cyborg the chance to tee off on your head. That's not a really good fight.
No. And if you end up doing that or you end up even if the catch weight is in a couple of years, yeah. We're breaking down this fight as much as we can for 34 seconds of a fight. It was an amazingly dominant performance from Ronda Rousey. Obviously, there was a little bit of personal animosity in there. It was just kind of interesting. If you take a second, and I think we're far enough into the week now, because I didn't know what to say the night of the fight. That was just amazing what
sure.
she did. I mean, she, you know, and I talked about her hands last week. I'm not sure about her hands. Everybody says their hands were real good.
They're good, but like, let's not say, she's not from the Matrix, right? Like some of these people are saying that she's the best boxer in MMA. She is not the best boxer in MMA.
No, and her for hands, everybody's favorite Mayweather Rousey fight that's going to happen in the future. You know,
right.
If she catches one from Floyd, she's done. You've got to go grab his leg and knock him to the ground like Couture did with Tony.
Absolutely. You know, I just think her hands have gotten remarkably better and are clearly the best in that class.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to holistically disagree with anyone who thinks that they are the best in MMA because they are not.
No, but they may be the best in women's MMA.
Hands down.
Except for Cyborg.
Remember, Cyborg lost a Thai boxing match.
I get that. But Thai's not MMA.
But it's boxing.
It is.
So that focuses
right,
on...
Right, but I'm talking about MMA hands.
On your
MMA hands.
Okay.
I understand. What? Hold on, let me... Oh, I thought you were talking about Tai Chi. No, my bad. No, I'm kidding.
Just pushing air around.
Right.
It's that's really good at that.
You don't actually hit things. You just kind of wave at the air.
Yes, and then stuff happens.
Right.
Okay, when we get back, we are going to talk to Glover Teixeira. We will also talk to Andrew Flower, break down more of the data around Ronda Rousey and why she is, as Ken alluded to, an outlier. We'll do that. Plus, we're heading to Tennessee as Glover Teixeira and OSP, Ovince St. Preux, headline that card on Fox Sports 1 this weekend.
Do we want to talk about Jake Shields?
And we will talk about Jake Shields and his eyes.
That was...
And his eyes.
Did you watch that?
Yeah, it was awful.
Oh, God.
It's terrible. We'll talk about all of that next. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. Eric Holcren, along with Ken Evans. Big fight this weekend. Ovince St. Preux taking on our next guest. Glover Teixeira is back on the show to join us. Glover, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I am fantastic. So excited for this weekend as the UFC heads to Tennessee. You are taking on Ovince St. Preux. This is going to be a super exciting fight, and I of course, want to talk about your thoughts heading into this fight, but I also want to talk about, you know, you did a really interesting interview with MMA Junkie where you were talking about the weight cut in your last fight and how that didn't really go the way that you wanted it to. And you said something interesting in that interview, and I wondered if you had a second to kind of dive into it. When you talked about the sodium level, like for a casual fan, when you say that your sodium wasn't where it was supposed to be or it was too high or whatever it was, what does that mean to a casual fan who's trying to understand the science of what you guys do to get down to 205?
Yeah, you know, when I cut weight for my last fight, I cut the salt of my diet for like at least 10 days, you know. And your body stopped producing, when you stop putting sodium in your body stopped producing sodium. So anything salt you eat and it's too much, and it's too much for you. And the thing is, after the wings, I dropped a lot of weight for the last fight, a lot of weight. Like, I lost 30 pounds in 1 week. So.
Holy cow.
And, yeah, that's too much weight. That, you know, that's like, to tell the truth, unprofessional to do. You know, it was my fault. It was this lack of unprofessional that I had, you know, to cut that much weight and to... But, you know, one, I was unprofessional to cut that much weight for myself, to hurt myself. But, you know, I was professional enough to put my body through there and make the weight. You know, I didn't go over there overweight or you know, I didn't make a weight. I went over there and I was 206 pounds. That's the limit. And, but when I recovered, I stopped putting too much sodium on my body, too much salt. Because, you know, I eat salt food and the IV with sodium, so my body kind of shut down a little bit. I got a whole, like, you know, swallow ankles and hands and the next day, so I feel really heavy and weird. I talk to the doctor later, and the doctor say, man, you know, this is very dangerous, man. Don't do that anymore because, you know, I can't go to your heart and you could have died with something like that, you know. So, I mean, right now I keep myself very light and, you know, keep myself a professional and not doing that to my body anymore.
So you've adjusted a little bit. You said you keep yourself a lot lighter. So has this week been, and I hate to use the word easy because what you guys do, I mean, for anyone who has not seen kind of what you guys go through to even drop 15 pounds to get down to 205, has this been easier for you this week, or do you feel in a better space this week than you did in that fight?
Oh, man, no one understand. It's like I'm lighter for this fight, you know. The weight cut for this fight is nothing. I've been eating normal. I've been eating good, you know. This is an incredible weight cut. This is the easiest weight. Because you're learning with things, you know.
Sure, I mean, yeah. Well,
like I say, like, you know, a loss maybe, people tell you the loss make you learn more from the loss and you learn from the win. And it's true, man. I mean, this weight cut is the easiest weight cut of all my fights, to tell you the truth.
Well, and how awesome is it for you to be able to eat real food, right? You're not starving yourself heading into this thing and trying to recover on 12 hours notice to be ready to go on Saturday night. So I imagine that this has probably been night and day between your Phil Davis fight and preparing for Ovince St. Preux.
It is, man. It is. I mean, not, you know, I'm still eating light because I still got to cut a few pounds, you know. I'm like, right now I'm like 9 pounds over. But you think about 9 pounds compared to last time, I was about like, and Thursday morning, I was about like maybe 20 pounds. So
wow.
That's 11 pounds there. Yeah, and probably like 20 or 18 pounds, something like that. But still, you know, also a lot of weight. And and I cut it all on Thursday night and Friday morning. But, you know, 9 pounds is it's easy, man. You know, but, like, I just got to eat light. And, but you know, I didn't cut the salt or anything. So come to Friday night and Saturday, I can eat normal, you know.
Awesome. Glover Teixeira on the phone with us talking about his fight with Ovince St. Preux. Let's talk about the fight. How excited are you for this main event with Ovince St. Preux? A very exciting fight. Lots of fans excited. What can they expect to see from you as you get into this fight with OSP?
Oh, I'm excited for this fight. And the fans can expect a new guy over there, man. You know, hopefully I get my game and put it on the combinations. And I'm a different fighter, man. I'm quicker. I'm faster. You know, I'm hungry. I wanna get that belt. I wanna get that title. I wanna be a champion. And I put myself in a situation that, like, you know, what I wanna do. You know, I wanna just keep going to UFC and get a paycheck, or I wanna be a champion. And that's what I wanna do. I wanna be a champion, man, because this is important. This is a dangerous sport, and we see what Saturday night, you know, hope is going to be a very exciting fight.
Now, Glover, for fans who may not have known kind of your backstory, it took a while for you to get into the UFC. Has it been worth the wait? I mean, because watching you, it's certainly been worth the wait for the fans. Have you felt like this is kind of, you've arrived here and you're kind of sucking it all up and enjoying this ride that you've been able to go on since you've got into the UFC?
Yeah, everything, man. I mean, I can't complain. You know, everything that you see, I went over there and I did some great fights. You know, I went to title fight with John Jones, one of the best of all times. And I mean, didn't get to win, but I got the experience. You know, 5 rounds, and I don't know, my last fight was a bad fight, but you know, that happens. And in a situation of being an athlete, being in a high level. And I just want to thank all the fans for all the support, man. I don't have a whole lot of fans. You know, I don't have a million followers on Twitter or anything, but the little followers I have, man, they're very great to me. They're very supportive.
Well, Glover, you may say that you don't have a million fans, but you have nearly 90,000, which, to put in perspective, is 10 times the amount that Ovince St. Preux has on Twitter. So I think you've got a lot of people in your corner that are excited to see you on Saturday night.
Well, no, for sure. You know, I mean, just Ovince St. Preux is like he's a rising fighter. He'll get to that point, you know. But like I say, you know, the important thing is the support that they give me, you know. There's not a bunch of people talking crap over there. Once in a while, there's a smart ass go over there and talking, you know, and say something. But, you know, I just laugh and I just come back with fun stuff for him.
Always humble, always amazing. Glover Teixeira, we cannot wait to see you in the Octagon on Saturday night against Ovince St. Preux. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk again soon. Good luck this weekend, my friend.
All right. Thank you, man. Appreciate the time.
Take care. All right, there he goes. Glover Teixeira fighting Ovince St. Preux this weekend. And at this point, we were going to go to Andrew Flower from the 538 blog. He wrote an awesome piece called Ronda Rousey Fights Like an Outlier. But as happens in the world of journalism, a story has blown up on him. So he is going to join us next week. We're going to try and do this again next week because we understand that he has an actual job to do and can't just jump on MMA podcasts whenever we ask him to. So we appreciate that, and we will get back with him. But some interesting stuff. If you haven't read the article, it's on our Facebook page at Wow Show. Some of the interesting things are, of course, the timing of MMA fights. If you look at the data that he pulled, the timing of MMA fights are getting longer. More of them are going to decisions, and obviously Ronda is not doing that. There are less people finishing fights with arm bars. That is a submission that is getting used less and less and less. The one that's getting used more and more and more, obviously, is the rear naked choke. The RNC, if you will. The Mataleon, if you want to go all Portuguese. The one thing that I can't wait to talk to him about is not only Ronda Rousey, but that singular point of data I think is interesting, is the RNC, the rear naked choke, the very first choke that you learn in jiu-jitsu. The fact that that one is on the rise, and if you look at the data points, if you go to our Facebook page, the fact that that one is on the rise and how fast it's on the rise offers some interesting questions about either jiu-jitsu as a whole or MMA jiu-jitsu, and what are people studying as they are getting into the octagon, or are they paying more attention to knockout power? To that end, knockouts and KOs, TKOs have stayed relatively flat, but some really interesting things in that article about what Ronda Rousey is able to do in that octagon in her 12 fights, or 6 in the UFC and her 6 outside of the UFC, as we head to her and Miesha Tate. And as we said earlier in the show, she is an 8-1 favorite of Miesha Tate, so not a lot of people giving Miesha a chance, and I might be one of those people. But we'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll break down the rest of what's going on this week. We'll talk a little bit more about Glover and Ovince St. Preux. We'll, of course, talk about Paul Harris and what should happen with him. He has been suspended, and the title has been removed. But what's next for him? We'll talk about all of that next. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show. Is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Ken Evans, breaking down everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Talk to Glover Teixeira. We talked to Andrew Flowers from 538 about Ronda Rousey and the data surrounding her. Now we break down what else is going on in the world of mixed martial arts, and we would be remiss if we didn't talk about everybody's favorite fighter, Husamar Palhares, and his battle at World Series of Fighting on last Saturday night against Jake Shields.
You know what's really interesting about World Series of Fighting? There's no reason in the world they should have gotten any press.
No,
that
of-
night, no. And they managed to do it in a couple different ways. We're going to start with Palhares.
Well, Palhares, of course, wins the fight and retains the title, but
that's against Jake Shields.
Against Jake Shields, and then holds the submission. You'll be familiar with this story because this is why he gets fired from every other organization.
I'm serious. This is like the fourth time he's guilty of this, right?
Yes. So, you know, I put on my Twitter account, Susan Davis, who you can get at Susie Koozie. That's her Twitter account.
Watch the spelling on that.
Yes. S-O-O-Z-I-E-C-U-Z-I-E, if you want to follow her, as you should. She actually broke it down by time. So the delay in seconds from when the tap is happening when he stops, and he averages about 3 seconds from when he actually stops cranking on people's arms. So he cranks on Jake cranks on Jake Shields' arm.
So that's usually, don't forget that, that's usually after the fighter's already tapped a couple times.
Correct.
Before the ref gets in there.
So the submission has started. We get to the point where it's so uncomfortable the person is tapping, and then we add another 3 seconds, which anyone who's been on the mat doing jiu-jitsu is death.
No, we're adding more time because it's from when the ref is actually trying to stop the fight.
Right.
Because usually there's at least a second or two of the fighter actually tapping. And again, no problem if you don't fight when the other guy taps. You wait for the ref. But the refs in these cases are there for up to 3 seconds.
Yes.
Trying to stop him. And they're always terrible, like, submissions, too. They're not chokes or where you'll go to sleep. It's like, I've got your arm backwards and could put it in your a-hole. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it was like an Americana Kimura sort of thing, which is a shoulder lock that he holds too long. When the fight is over, Jake Shields takes a swing at Palhares, and they obviously have to break everything up. And then Jake essentially goes to his corner. He gets interviewed by the guys from World Series of Fighting. You can see immediately there are problems with his eyes. Mm-hmm. He's been essentially clawed at the eyes 8 times in the course of the fight.
Did you watch back? There was somebody did a supercut of every time like Jake got basically gouged. Oh my God, this would make Ric Flair cringe.
Right?
The dude was in his eyes all night. I mean, and you know, you see guys, and I think it was Patrick Cummins, right? You posted that picture.
Yeah.
You see guys who get swelled up when they get beat up.
But those are punches.
Those are punches. And I don't know what it is, but there's just something about seeing Jake's eyes basically all cut open around his eyes.
It was terrible.
Like, that dude has just been working. Like, wait a minute. Did anybody check the dude's nails?
Right.
Hell, I remember when I was 5 years old in a McDojo Taekwondo class. First thing everybody had to do was hold their hands out, make sure you didn't have nails. We not doing this in World Series of Fighting? Because he was in his eyes the whole fight. He's a dirty fighter. He can't keep saying that he doesn't know what he's doing, because he's gotten fired 3 times for it, doing it 4 times. You know, he got popped for the steroids. You know, Dana White made a big statement about him after he left from UFC. It's like, he was already on the fence. This dude's cranking subs. Nobody really likes having to deal with him. Nobody wants to take the fight, and he cranked the sub again. I don't need the headache. Like, you mentioned this offline earlier. About his training partners, like, who's training with that dude, right?
Yeah, like, who would, like, if you watch how he fights, right, he fights to just break everything. Mm-hmm. Like, who's training with him at that point that wants to, like, hey, Ken, it's your turn to roll with Paul Harris today? You'd be like, hell no, I quit.
No.
Right, like,
right.
I'm not in this. I don't care what gym this is. I'm not rolling with this guy.
Well, and the other thing too is World Series of Fighting is, it has an issue where, and again, I didn't think we'd be breaking down the businesses of a World Series of Fighting.
Its issue is, it's World Series of Fighting.
There's an issue there. Well, and part of that issue is the fact, despite the fact that he would have been champion, and he's been stripped since, and he's suspended
indefinitely, suspended. So essentially fired.
So he's probably going to be fired, and he's suspended indefinitely. So even if he would have held the championship, for whatever God knows reason, if they would have said, okay, but he's the champion, so he's going to have to fight somebody. The World Series of Fighting, what level was that? Was that welter? I think that was welter.
Yes.
The World Series of Fighting welterweight championship, you're not going to get guys to fight Paul Harris in World Series of Fighting.
Nope.
Like, you had a pretty big getting Jake Shields in World Series of Fighting. You know, enough of a get where I'm paying attention to what's going on over there that night. I didn't know it was going to devolve into this insanity of a story where his eyes are bleeding out, and, you know, his arm was nearly tore off because he wouldn't let go of a hold. But you got a pretty decent main event there. Again, why you wasted against the UFC, I don't know, but I guess we're talking about it still this week, so it worked out.
It worked out because of a controversy. Right, otherwise, we wouldn't.
But you're not going to get dudes like Jake Shields to come fight for your organization if they feel like their arm's going to get broken in there. You know, that's Jake Shields living at this point. You know, dudes like him and other guys that come out of UFC, they've got a couple of options at this point. And usually Bellator is that option. So you're still the second option behind Bellator for the most part when these fighters are looking at events and what they want to do. And if you're going to have fighters that are dirty in your league and you get a rep as a dirty league, nobody's going to come over there. So I understand entirely why they suspended him. I also understand why they took the chance, but damn. It blew up in their face.
Well,
it
blew
as
up
far
in their face,
goes.
And I thought it was interesting. Tuesday night, Ariel Helwani tweeted that he thought that they should strip Mazzagatti. Super nice guy, but he's clearly lost a step or two.
I don't think he did anything wrong in that instance.
Not catching that. Well, I think he's referring to catching the eye gouging.
Okay.
Right?
I thought you meant the end of the
fight.
He's
not protecting. Well, I mean, what do you want him to do? Right? Does he put gloves on and fight Paul
Harris
in that case?
But I think that's where I made a mistake. So yeah, the eye gouging—that's a rough one.
I mean, you're not even paying attention. Like,
well, yeah, and the other thing, too, is that happened in the first round. If you look at Jake's eyes, you know, that's one thing the ref does usually. You kind of see him poke their head into each corner. And if you note it, let's say you missed the gouging in the first round.
Sure.
Now, I walk over to you, Eric. I'm like, oh, damn, you got cuts under your eyes. I'm going to keep an eye on that. It didn't seem to happen. So I'd have to look again to see the angles on everything, because that's the problem, too. Sometimes if you have a dirty fighter, he knows what he's doing. He knows when the ref is adjusting that position, because it only takes a second. And obviously, yes, they're there to protect the fighters. But if you've got a legitimately dirty guy, and here's the thing. When everybody says dirty fighter sometimes, I don't know Usama or Paul Harris. I don't know the guy. I've never met him. We've never even talked to him on the show. I haven't even talked to dudes that know him. I don't know if he's a bad guy. I do think he's a dirty fighter. Some dudes just kind of train that way and end up that way and are in gyms that let that happen. He's one of those dudes and never was able to learn his lesson. Is he a bad guy? I don't know. I'm not saying he is or isn't, but if I am saying he's a dirty fighter, whether or not he knows he is or isn't,
well,
you need to pay attention.
I think in 2015, none of these organizations can take a dirty fighter. The sport as a whole, when you mention it to somebody who doesn't know what it is, it's automatically human cockfighting, right? It's automatically super bloody and super violent, and it's terrible for society, and all of those debates that you get into when you meet somebody who doesn't know what it is, and all you need is a guy like this who's going out to literally break limbs on people despite that they've given up, they've thrown the towel in, that you just, as an organization, you cannot take the chance on that.
So here's the interesting thing on World Series of Fighting 2 is, how is the UFC going to promote the Nurmagomedov Diaz fight without acknowledging how things went down? Because Nate Diaz got into a fight with Habib in the crowd. Nick was there, decided to throw a beer at Habib. So that was interesting. So you've got this whole brawl and this whole very interesting backstory in this situation. And essentially at this point, the UFC can't do anything with it other than make the fight. But they can't acknowledge why they're making the fight or the bad blood here without acknowledging World Series of Fighting. If I'm UFC, I basically acknowledge it and say it's a lesser level of some sort and kind of get a little bit of the interest there. Because, man, who doesn't? I mean, Habib's an awesome fighter, but I mean, you've got almost a co-main event here now with a little bit of publicity behind it against one of the Diaz brothers.
Yeah, although I think Habib Nurmagomedov is in title contention, and I think fighting Nate Diaz.
I don't care.
Okay,
I
want to
see him. I want to see him fight Nate Diaz.
That said, we're going to do it. So look for them to get that done.
Where is Nate in the rankings? Is he still out technically, or did he sign back up?
I think he's in. I just don't know where. I think he's probably 10. If I had to look.
Okay.
So let me look.
You're grabbing
that.
The fighter rankings right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'll take care of it. And then also this week we are headed to Tennessee. There is a fight night on Fox Sports 1. Your boy Nate Diaz is 14. Sorry, I was 4 off.
14, whatever. Yes. I still want the fight.
Fair.
So
yes.
Where is Nurmagomedov?
He's right behind Cerrone at 3.
Oh, okay. All right.
So that's
I still want to see the fight.
That's like the Dan Henderson trolling that he's fighting Jacare.
Oh, right.
Which that was the other thing that happened before we talk about Teixeira and St. Preux. The other thing that happened on Saturday night is Dan Henderson decided to troll the internet, which was so awesome.
Well, it was kind of funny, too, because it was sort of off. It's just how you'd expect an old man to quote-unquote troll. He could have done it so much better, and so you weren't even sure if he was trying to troll. I still don't know if he knows if he was trolling the internet or if he thought he was just being coy.
Like, it would seem like if... his name's slipping my head.
This reminds me of Michael Jordan. Did you see him get caught this week?
No.
He was doing a high school presentation, and he did a Q&A, and some kid hit him up with a "What are those?" for his shoes. The crowd erupts because, they're high school kids. They all know the meme. Poor Michael Jordan's just on stage like, what just happened? That's kind of Dan Henderson. Like, he sort of kind of knows he's trolling, maybe, but I think he thought he was either being funnier about it or being more coy about it, and I don't know which.
Well, and what I was about to say, and it slipped my mind for a second, but like it looked like if you were trying to do an imitation of Norm MacDonald on Twitter but weren't Norm MacDonald.
Right, that's very good. That's
right?
Very good.
You know how Norm just kind of like goes off on the deep end and people just love it because he just does whatever? Because
he doesn't care.
Right, but he knows that he doesn't care. Dan wasn't really that great. So there was back and forth between many of us trying to figure out what he's talking about, but they did eventually name his fight. At one point, he said it was a rematch, so I know myself, Ryan Dempsey, who's a huge fan of this show, and certainly Ken Evans, got really fired up that it might be Bisping. Turned out that it wasn't.
No, it wasn't Bisping. It's going to be Henderson-Belfort, allegedly?
Henderson-Vitor 3 for all the marbles.
I don't think we've gotten UFC confirmation on that one, though.
We have not, but I mean... I guess maybe he could still be trolling.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Like, zero
if he's
idea.
Really good at it, maybe.
Zero idea what's happening there. So that is happening. And also this weekend, as I said, UFC Fight Night in Tennessee. We are taking Glover and Ovince St. Preux, two guys at light heavyweight that are certainly rolling up the rankings. Glover obviously has fought for the title before and hung in there. Was not the answer that we thought he was. Certainly was not as successful as Gustafsson was against Jones, but he was in there. Now taking on Ovince St. Preux, which coming over from Strikeforce was one of my favorite guys. He is on a 2-fight win streak. He beat Shogun, knocked him out, and knocked out Pat Cummings after losing a decision to Ryan Bader. So on a 2-fight win streak, and he is taking on Glover, who has lost 2 in a row to Phil Davis and John Jones after a win over Ryan Bader. So that's how you get your MMA math to see these two guys in the octagon against one another. The co-main event is Michael Johnson against Benny Darouche, which is a great fight at lightweight. And then you also get a fight to pay attention to, especially after last week. Sarah McMahon and Amanda Nunes, they will be on the prelims on Fox Sports 2 as we figure out what's going to happen after Miesha Tate. If there is no Cyborg, is it Holly Holm? Is it one of these two? You know, like where do we end up?
Holly Holm is the interesting one to kind of see her striking and kind of see what Ronda did or, quote, didn't do.
Sure.
So what happens if Ronda goes in there against Holly Holm and is willing to trade? Holly Holm is the one where you look in this division. Overall package, no, she's not Ronda Rousey. But if Ronda decides to stand and say, I can beat her up on her feet, that's where things even out a whole lot more with Holly Holm.
I guess to circle back, though, and I know we were going to actually talk about these fights, but we'll just continue to talk about Ronda because that's what everyone else is doing this week, so we might as well do the same thing. I don't know. I don't get any indication from Ronda that she's got in her craw that she now needs to beat everybody with their own superpower. Like, I don't know that she's...
No, I'm not saying
that. Like, I don't think she's like, oh, Green Lantern, I will outring you, and you know, Superman, I will out... I don't think
right now, whoever from the UFC has to monitor this podcast is going, shut up, Eric. He's at least making it seem like these fights are going to be competitive. Just shut up. Let him sell the Holly Holm fight. That's all we got after Tate.
Let him sell the fact that she's going to go, what are you awesome at? I will take you at your awesomeness instead of doing what I'm amazing at. I don't think that that's a thing. That said, McMahon and Nunes, you want to pay attention to that because, as Ken alluded to in the first segment, it is essentially Ronda Rousey, one of the best in the world, tied with Demetrius Johnson in title defenses at 6. And then the top of the heap at the bantamweight division.
Watch that fight.
So would everybody else.
Rousey, Mighty Mouse.
And what would be interesting, it would be the first time many people would have seen Mighty Mouse.
Right. Who's that guy?
and so it's Miesha Tate below that, and then pretty much everybody else. So this will be a battle to see kind of who's in the running to climb back up and maybe fight for a title.
Fight again, maybe.
Maybe, perhaps, sort of, kind of. Like I said, main event is Glover and Ovince St. Preux. I think a really interesting fight. Ovince's knockout of Shogun was nothing short of stupendous, and I look to see him standing there and bang against Glover, and I'm really interested to see how Ovince has grown. As I said, big fan of Ovince St. Preux. Glover
seems like a slow build for that dude. We've been talking about him for a long time.
We thought once he came out of Strikeforce that he was going to hit the ground running and be this force, but I really feel like, and we've talked about this, that I really feel that there is a huge disparity in talent from everybody else and the UFC, and mm-hmm. I think it takes a little while for some of these guys to be like, oh, okay, got it. We're up a couple. We got to level up here a little bit.
Well, and he had that, a little bit of a setback against Bader, too, because he had been on that run for so long.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to kind of see where he is against Glover.
But we will keep track of all of the results. You can follow along on Twitter, @WowShow. And then if you need anything, you can just get at us, @WowShow on Twitter and Facebook. Have a wonderful weekend. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.